Hello and welcome to this Endo Life. I'm Jessica Duffin. I'm an endo warrior, an endo health coach, and this podcast is all about living and thriving with endometriosis. As always, this podcast is here for educational purposes only. Please consult your medical practitioner before making any nutritional changes or bringing in any supplements. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to my lovely sponsors at BU. And I wanted to tell you about their new bath bombs, which are naturally made and contain beautiful essential oils. And their peppermint and eucalyptus essential oils bath bomb is doing so well right now with endometriosis community. They're getting loads of feedback about it. And, you know, if you love the patches themselves, you're going to love the bath bombs, because essentially it's the patch in a bath bomb. So, you know, if you're on your period or if you're in pain, you could have a bath with some of the bath bombs or one of them. I don't know, you could have multiple if you want. And then get out the bath, maybe rub in some CBD balm and put your patch on top, which is what a lot of people are feeding back that they're doing. So I would love to do that, but I don't have a bath, so I can't. But if you have a bath, then, you know, I think these new bath bombs could be a lovely way to help alleviate some of your pain. So if you'd like to check them out, you can go to BU, which is buonline.co.uk, and you can also order them from anywhere in the world on cultbeauty.co.uk, and they deliver worldwide. Hi, everyone. So before we get started with this week's podcast episode, I wanted to tell you about a brand new freebie that I'm really excited about, the Flare Up Prevention Mini Email Course. From Monday the 4th of March, you'll receive a weekly email with education on one specific strategy which can help reduce the frequency and or severity of your flare-ups, whether they're random or they come like clockwork every period. Now, the caveat here is that it's not your fault that you have flare-ups and that you have endo. And doing, you know, X, Y, Z does not guarantee that you won't have flare-ups. But what we know is that there are certain drivers behind endo pain. Drivers like inflammatory chemicals such as prostaglandins, pelvic floor dysfunction, and an upregulated nervous system. There are tools and strategies we can use to address these problems and therefore may lower your chances of flare-ups or reduce the intensity of them. However, there are many contributing factors to flare-ups, and your pain may be more down to one thing than another. So some tools in this freebie may work less for you than other tools. If you don't experience relief with this freebie, it's not because you didn't try hard enough or you didn't do it correctly. Endo is an unpredictable beast, and every person is different with their own unique root causes and endo challenges. But what I can say is that every single strategy in this freebie is evidence-based and tried and tested, and they will help your body better fight endo and generally support your overall health and well-being. And despite my extensive disclaimer, I've seen these strategies literally change lives. They've taken clients from not being able to stand to having meals out on their periods. So if you're up for it, it could really be worth a chance. As I said, we get started on March the 4th. If you hear this message after March the 4th, don't worry, you can still sign up and I'll catch you up with all the emails. The link to sign up is in the show notes. Hopefully I'll see you there. Hi everyone. Sorry this is a bit late. It was supposed to go out the weekend, but we have had a strange 2 weeks where we've moved about four times from our Airbnb accommodations due to there being problems with them. So we moved again at the weekend. So this episode has been delayed going out, but here it is. So as part of Endometriosis Awareness Month, I'm answering your questions over on Instagram Live, and you all seem to really like it when I share those IG Live recordings on the podcast. So that's what we're doing at the moment. Now, I had an issue with the sound quality last week, and I did try to make some changes. It hasn't helped. So we've edited it again to remove as much as
of that background buzz as possible. But unfortunately, it's still there. So this week, I'm answering how to manage fatigue and brain fog. And instead of answering a number of questions, I really wanted to talk about this quite specifically, because I know so many of you struggle with these symptoms. So this episode is solely focused on my answer to this question. Here it is.
Okay, so we have a bit of a weird setup today. I'm holding my phone, so I'm very close up. Because last week it didn't seem like there was a problem, but afterwards the recording sounded really weird. And I think it's because I broke my, the thing that holds your phone, the stand, the tripod thing. And so I had it on a stack of books, so I think it was like muffling the sound. So last week when I released the recording of this IG Live, it sounded really fuzzy. So I'm holding the phone up, so I'm really close, and I talk with my hands, so you're going to get a lot of this going on. Hi, everyone. Hi. So, yeah, sorry for the extreme close-up. And the other thing is I'm just answering one question today because we're packing tonight. We've had some problems in the Airbnb that we're at, and so they have given us the different apartment. So we have a lot of stuff with us because we're traveling, so we have to tonight. So it's a shorter one tonight, and I actually think that that's a good thing, because this question has multiple kind of components to it, and I just want to give you guys that opportunity to digest it. So my arm is already tired. I've got notes here, so I'm going to be looking down. But the question is, what can you do, what tips for managing endo fatigue and brain fog? So the people who are in the group, I'd love to know if you're watching now, if you have fatigue and brain fog, if you struggle with it. And if you're watching this back, you can just, comment on the Instagram video that I'll put up after this. So there are multiple factors that contribute to endo fatigue and brain fog. So we can't address them all in one IG Live. What I'm going to do is give you the kind of key starting points that I work with my clients, and also that affect most of us and will be beneficial overall for endo management. Sorry, I've had my hair up all day in a messy bun and it's kind of stuck that way. So that's what we're going to go through, the kind of key components, the starting places. Now, bear in mind that every single person with endo is unique, and what's causing your fatigue and your brain fog may be different from someone else, and it might be a bit more advanced than these strategies. It might be a bit more complex, but I will say that even though there may be some more complex issues, these will normally be contributing as well. So you're not wasting your time. Okay, so maybe at the end, what I'll do is give you a little bit of an overview of some of the more complex things that could be causing your fatigue. But let's start with, and this isn't, I suppose it is in a particular order. So number one is managing your blood sugar. So with blood sugar, when you have highs and lows, you're going to have extreme energy crashes. When you come down from a blood sugar spike, you're going to really crash. Now, for those of you who are like, what does that even mean? I'll just do a very quick science lesson. So when you eat carbohydrates that get broken down into glucose in your gut, gut is our body's preferred source of fuel. And that glucose gets sucked up by the small intestine and goes into your bloodstream. Then a hormone comes along called insulin. It's a little bit like a pickup truck, and it delivers the glucose to your cells for energy. And they're like, lovely, thank you, now we've got energy to keep going. So that's great, all well and good if you're eating a blood sugar balancing diet and you're eating healthy sources of carbohydrates and you don't have diabetes. However, when you are eating a very carbohydrate-rich meal that's low in fiber or low in protein or low in fat, you can get blood sugar spikes. And so what happens is you get a lot of glucose in your bloodstream all at once because the gut doesn't have anything to digest and break down in a slow, controlled way. So if you're eating, let's say, a really hearty salad and you've got some chicken and you've got some rice, that rice is going to be your primary carbohydrate source. And that is going to be released in glucose. But if you're eating it in the context of protein, you've got some avocado for fat, and you've got lots of veggies on that plate, you're not going to get a spike from that, in theory. There are some kind of hacks you can do, but in theory. And so that's a very balanced plate. However, if you were just eating a bowl of rice on its own, or you were having a refined carbohydrate like bread or pasta or a donut, very sugary, there's no fiber in that to slow down that release. And those refined carbohydrates are already in a very easy to digest form. So they're not a whole food anymore. So the gut doesn't have to do much work to break it down. It just can suck up that glucose really, really quickly. So there's no slow and steady release. It just goes straight to your bloodstream. You have a big surge. And then what happens is insulin is like, well, your body gets stressed by this. Your body shouldn't have that much glucose in the bloodstream. It releases lots and lots of insulin. Unfortunately, the body hasn't developed quite the best approach to this, and it releases too much insulin, and your blood sugar goes down very, very quickly because insulin will go, oh, we have to go and put all of this sugar into storage because the cells can't possibly take it all. And so it gets shoved into storage in your liver or fat cells, and your blood sugar plummets down. So all you really need to remember is if you eat a big carbohydrate meal that especially is refined carbs, then you can get a spike. But if you eat, you know, fats and fibers and protein, then you're balancing the blood sugar. So when you get these spikes, you're going to come down from that spike and you're going to have a big crash in energy because all of a sudden, your cells do not have glucose to, so they don't have glucose to keep going. So you're going to feel really, really fatigued. So that's one way that blood sugar spikes can create feelings of fatigue and brain fog, because it does affect cognitive function. Your brain cells need glucose, right? So that's one way. The other way is when this is happening on a repeated level, you get something called insulin resistance. And what that is insulin is coming along, knocking on your cell's door and being like, hey, I've got some glucose for you. And your cells are just like, we cannot deal with anymore. They've become resistant because they're so used to all of these spikes that it's almost like a protective mechanism. They've just become resistant to it. They're not taking in any more glucose. So your cells are actually starving for glucose, but they've kind of gone into the survival mode where, due to the repeated spikes, they just resist any more glucose intake. So you struggle to get the glucose levels that you need. Your blood sugar keeps going up. Your insulin keeps going up because the body's like, hey, insulin, do your job. But your cells aren't getting the fuel that they need. So that can create chronic levels of fatigue. Okay, so again, really all you need to remember is that the blood sugar swings will create big energy slumps. So you might feel really, really fatigued after like a heavy carb meal like pasta, or you might have mid-morning energy dips, or afternoon slumps, especially after lunch. So that's the first part. And then the second part is that it can create ongoing fatigue, like constant fatigue, if you become insulin resistant. So the number one way to manage your blood sugar is to eat a blood sugar balancing plate and be mindful of refined carbs and simple sugars, okay? So when you're building a blood sugar balancing plate, you're looking at half of your plate is lower starchy veggies. So tomatoes, broccoli, cucumber, spinach, lettuce, red peppers, cabbage, cauliflower, pretty much all your veggies, other than things like sweet potato, butternut squash, like those big root veggies. And then a quarter of your plate is protein. So that might be beans, or it might be chicken, or it might be eggs. And then the final quarter is a starchier whole food complex carb. So I don't mean like pasta, I mean a whole food carb. So that might be beans, it might be black rice, it might be sweet potatoes. And then you're topping all of that with two heaped tablespoons of healthy fats. And that could, you know, if you think about the equivalent of two heaped tablespoons, that's kind of like the minimum, you know, you don't have to cap it. It might be half an avocado. It might be a dressing that you've made mixed up of olive oil and tahini, something like that. The fat, the fiber from the veg and the protein are going to help to slow down that blood sugar spike. Now, does that mean you can't eat refined carbs like pasta? Of course you can. It's just about, for the most part, you're leaning into these blood sugar balancing meals most of the time. And this isn't just because you've got endo. Everyone on the planet would benefit from balancing their blood sugar. The fact that our society, our kind of modern diets are not set up for blood sugar balancing, for blood sugar balance, is why we have such a crisis with diabetes these days. So this is not something that's, oh, Jesus, it's another thing to do for endo, although I understand it can feel that way. This is something that can benefit everyone's health, and blood sugar imbalances are one of the leading causes behind things like Alzheimer's and heart disease and so many different inflammatory diseases. So it's beneficial for your overall health.
Just a reminder that this episode is sponsored by BU. These natural patches last for 12 hours, so they bring you prolonged relief and can begin working on relaxing your muscles before the pain kicks in, so you're prepared even if your period comes during the middle of the day. Some people even find that wearing them a night before their period can really help soothe the inflammation in the area. To shop, just head to the link in my show notes.
If you're going to be eating refined carbs and sugar on the occasion, then don't panic about it. There are some hacks that you can take to prevent those spikes. I'm not going to get into them now because we'll be here all night, but a really great resource is to check out the Glucose Goddess, and she's got some great hacks if you do want to eat that plate of pasta. But I also cover ways to manage your blood sugar, not just these, but tips and other methods in my podcast, on loads of articles online. If you Google Jessica Duffin blood sugar, you're going to find my free resources on balancing your blood sugar. So that's one of the first ways to manage endo fatigue and brain fog. The second one is check your nutrient status, guys. Check your iron, your vitamin D, your B12, and your folate, because all of these, when they're low, they can create fatigue and cognitive problems, so brain fog, memory problems, that kind of thing. And many people with endo have nutrient deficiencies, especially if you have gut health problems, because gut health problems can affect your absorption. So if you want to know how to test your nutrient levels, and you want to know a bit more about why your nutrients might be affected with endo, then I've got a series on this on my podcast. It's quite recent. It started in December. And so you can just go back to December, and it starts with iron, and I think it goes into vitamin D and stuff. But it's individual episodes. So there's one on iron, there's one on vitamin D, etc. So get those levels tested. And if you need to change your diet and improve your nutrient levels with also supplements, then do that. So check those, because I see those four, especially, not so much folate, but D, B12 and iron, I see a lot with my clients, like deficiencies with those. Okay, number three, eat a nutrient-dense anti-inflammatory diet. I'm really regretting choosing, holding my phone for this live. My arms are in agony and I've already worked them out today, so they're sore already. So a nutrient-dense anti-inflammatory diet is going to help your body to lower inflammation. And chronic inflammation is something that people with endometriosis do struggle with, and it does affect your energy and your brain function. So lowering your inflammation levels can help with fatigue and brain fog. The other thing is, if you're eating a nutrient-dense diet, you're going to get more nutrients, which is going to help your body to make energy. Because it's not just glucose that your body is making energy from. There are actually different nutrients that are absolutely essential for the process of taking glucose and converting it into the energy that we use. So we don't use glucose directly. We convert it into something called ATP. That doesn't matter. All you need to know is that we need to convert glucose to use it. And so we need certain nutrients for that process. Magnesium, folate, B12. There are so many different nutrients involved. So it's essential to be eating a diet that is going to be feeding your body what it needs. Now, from an anti-inflammatory perspective, there are a number of anti-inflammatory diets. The obviously most researched one is the Mediterranean diet, but really the themes that come out of these anti-inflammatory diets, in terms of the types of foods that you're eating, are vegetables, fruit, nuts and seeds, legumes, beans, pulses, whole grains. They can be gluten-free if you need them to be, but whole grains. So not like whole grain bread or wholemeal bread, because that's not whole. It's just using flour that's from, you know, whole wheat, but it's not a whole food. A whole food would be quinoa or whole oats and things like that. And then healthy fats, avocado, fatty fish, olive oil, eggs, and lean sources, lean organic where possible, protein sources. So depending on your dietary choices, that might be fish, it might be eggs, it might be beans and whole grains and nuts, it might be meat, lean meat. So if you are eating meat generally, if you're kind of toeing the line with the research, we're looking at moderate amounts of lean, healthy, organic meats that are unprocessed, okay? If you want to kind of understand, I know that around meat and dairy, there is like a lot of confusion in the endo world. But if you want to know more about that, then have a listen to my podcast episodes. I've got a great episode with Katie from Heal Endo. That's a really good one to listen to. If you kind of go back through all my anti-inflammatory episodes, you can have a listen there. Obviously, in, you know, things like my courses and my workshops, I cover this as well. And of course, just Google anti-inflammatory Jessica Juffin and you're going to get articles and podcasts that come up. So those are the key components. And really, when we're thinking about eating for an anti-inflammatory diet, we're leaning towards it the majority of the time. Doesn't mean you can't have some fried food occasionally. Doesn't mean you can't have some sweets occasionally. It's just the majority of the time. I personally like the 80-20 rule. It just gives me some flexibility in my diet. It works well for my endo. In the beginning, you know, if you're looking for, actually, no, I'm going to leave it there. I'm not going to complicate things. So number four is work on your HPA axis. Okay, so what is that? Your HPA axis is what regulates your stress response and your sleep-wake cycle. So we're focusing on your sleep-wake cycle today. I'm just thinking about how to phrase this. Okay, I am going to tell you a little bit about the stress response. So the HPA axis triggers the release of cortisol and adrenaline when you're stressed, but it also releases cortisol early hours in the morning and it rises until you wake up, and then about an hour after it gets to its peak. So it's not just your stress hormone, it's your waking hormone. It's almost like your productivity hormone. It actually gets you going for the day. And what it does is it peaks about an hour after waking, and then it plateaus as the day goes on. And then by the evening, we want it to be really low because melatonin is going to rise and get you sleepy. And cortisol suppresses melatonin. Now, what happens is this lovely rhythm can get dysfunctional. If you've been exposed to long-term chronic stress, which I think most of us have with endo, right? It's a stressful condition to live with. Then what can happen is this HPA axis, this cortisol rhythm, can get dysfunctional. In the beginning, for most people, it's going to make cortisol very, very high. But over time, what can happen is that cortisol starts to be suppressed. So you actually end up, in the simplest of terms, it's a bit complicated, but what can happen is your cortisol gets suppressed and you actually end up having low levels, and you might even get kind of what I think is one of the worst combinations, low levels during the day, high levels at night. So you can't sleep during the day. Sorry, you can't sleep at night, but you have zero energy during the day. Now, interestingly, research shows that many people with endometriosis have low cortisol levels. So our levels are low. So what do? We need to get them up in a healthy way. I don't mean go and get stressed out. That's not what we need to do. When you're healing your cortisol levels, you need to be actually, you're not trying to stimulate it. You're trying to repair your HPA axis. Remember, chronic stress is one of the causes of your cortisol eventually getting low. So we actually need to calm the nervous system. But one of the easiest ways to train, because I understand that managing stress is difficult, one of the easiest ways to start training your cortisol to rise is to get daylight. It doesn't have to be sunlight, daylight to your eyes in the morning. So when I say it doesn't have to be sunlight, it's because I've had some people say, oh, you know, I live in Norway and it's really dark in the winter, or it's really cloudy in Copenhagen and things like that. So they don't do this step. It doesn't need to be bright light. It just needs to be light, because your circadian rhythm, so your sleep-wake cycle is the other term for it, is controlled by light and dark. So the best way to get it up in the morning and get it down at night is to get exposure to real light, not artificial light, not like this light that's kind of shining on me here, but daylight. And at night, dimming the lights. We do not want bright lights at night. We want amber colored lights. We want red colored lights. We definitely don't want blue colored lights. So, sorry, I'm going to sneeze. It's going to come. So I'm going to start talking funny because I'm trying to like talk with needing to sneeze. So yes, you can go down, not a rabbit hole, but you know, later stages, we can talk about reducing screen exposure at night and, you know, getting blue light blocking glasses for the evening and getting red bulbs for nighttime. But that's, you know, getting into the weeds. One of the easiest first steps you can take is just in the morning, opening your, I'm looking over there because that's where the window is, opening your windows and letting light come in. If you've got a garden, if you've got a balcony, go and have your breakfast out there, or just go and stand out there when you wake up. Literally just go and stand out there. Now, ideally, we do want at least 10 minutes to 30 minutes of daylight exposure in the morning. So it could be that you sit and you have your breakfast out there, you go for a morning walk. And this should be as early as you possibly can. You know, for some of us, we need to get ready and get other people ready and get to work. So it might be that you sit by the window with it open, have your coffee or whatever it may be, and then, you know, you get the rest of that light on your commute in the morning, you know, and walking to the station or whatever. But as much light as you possibly can manage, that's realistic for you, as early as you possibly can in your routine in the morning. That's going to be the number one thing to start getting your cortisol to go up. Then at night, just start dimming the lights. Switch off these overhead lights. This one's off already. We've got these side lights on. We're in an Airbnb, honestly, they're god awful. They're bright, bright white. I would change all, like, what would you call these? Side lights, lamps, to an amber colour. So that when your evening comes, you've got amber lights, you've got orangey toned lights. It's very cozy, but it's better for your melatonin. But you don't need to worry about that. Just turn off the overhead lights, start dimming the lights, and then, you know, before bed, maybe use a candle or something if you can. If you can. If not, just dim the lights. So start with light in the morning. Then when you feel ready, start getting those lights low in the evening. So those are the four. Hang on. Yes. Four main tips to get you started managing endo fatigue and brain fog. Now, these processes take time. Healing endo fatigue and brain fog, especially when it comes to lowering inflammation, balancing your blood sugar, and also getting cortisol up, they're going to take some time, guys. You need to give this like 3 to 6 months, really as your like foundational basis of time to start working on this. Now, you might have more complex things going on. You might have some other conditions potentially, like POTS, that's causing fatigue, or you might have some gut health issues that's affecting your energy. So there are some other things to address, but honestly, these are the foundational ones that you, the core. When I say foundational, I don't mean like, oh, they're easy, they're foundational, they're like, they're kind of weak and they're not that meaningful. Because I feel like when we say something is foundational, people are like, oh no, I want the hard stuff. I want like the advanced stuff, because they don't think that like the foundational strategies work. No, they're foundational because they need to be in place. They're essential. They're like building, you know, they're the foundations of a house. You can't build a house. You can't build the big brick walls. You can't put a fancy bathroom in or a kitchen in without these core foundations. You know, the core foundations in place. So that's kind of the same approach that I'm taking here and with what I'm suggesting for endo fatigue and brain fog. So I'm going to release this as an episode on the podcast. If you don't want to just watch it back and you want to make notes, it will be out this weekend as a podcast episode. I hope this was helpful. I will see you guys next week and I will answer more questions. I've got a long list of questions. And as I said, today I'm just focusing on one question because we are about to start packing to move again. This is the third time in 2 weeks because we've had a series of unfortunate events with Airbnbs. But I hope this was helpful and I'm wishing you the best of luck with your endo fatigue and your brain fog journey. All right, bye guys.
So if you found this episode helpful and you want to learn more about living well with endo or you'd like some further help, I wanted to remind you of the resources I have available to you and how you can work with me if you'd like to. So I obviously have hundreds of these episodes for you to binge on, and I do have 2 free columns. So one on endometriosis.net and one on endometriosis news, and there are countless articles on there to help you thrive. You can also sign up to my newsletter for tips and updates. I have a digital cookbook and nutrition guide, This Endo Life, It Starts With Breakfast, which you can download for just $9.99. And if you want to go that step further, I have short and budget-friendly masterclasses in nutrition, surgery prep and recovery, and natural pain relief. I also have a DIY course, Live and Thrive with Endo, The Foundations, which you can sign up to at any time at a really affordable price point and you have lifetime access to. So you can go at your own pace and literally look back at it years down the line. This 4-module course will provide you with the most effective yet easy to digest tools and strategies to reduce your pain, fatigue, endo belly, brain fog, and hormonal symptoms and allow you to live your life again. Each lesson includes the core foundational needle movers that I have seen work for my clients time and time and time again. You get all the essential information that you need to be endo without the overwhelm. Finally, you can apply to work with me one-to-one. This is my most advanced and personalized offer, so I only take a handful of clients. To find out the details and the application process, head to my coaching page. The links to all of these resources and ways to work with me are in the show notes. And finally, to help others find this podcast and reach as many people with endo as possible, please leave a review and please share with your friends and family and subscribe.